Ukraine calling.
Every meter is soaked in blood or lost limbs.
Is it gonna fall?
If Trump comes to back into the White House in US presidential elections, that's probably not good news for Ukraine. Last year, there was more Ukrainian on the streets, and lots of younger people, well, no, people of all ages, have taken a principled decision to brush up on their Ukrainian and transform, belong to those that think that Putin is a product of Russia, whether it's Tsarist or communist or the present environment. They will, of course, try to punish Ukraine and wreak revenge in whatever way they can.
Good day, Brian Bonner here with Ukraine Calling. I'm very excited today to have Askol Krushelnitsky with me. Hello, Askol.
Brian, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Lots of questions. Askold is one of the premier war reporters of our time. He started, whether he wanted to or not, he started covering wars from the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in 1980. He is true Ukrainian diaspora, the son of World War II refugees. He's worked for all kinds of UK and other newspapers. He and I share the distinction of being Kyiv Post's chief editor, one of only, or two of only 15 people in the world who have that title. And he was, for a year and a half, during a tumultuous period in American politics, the Washington correspondent for the Kyiv Post, when I was still the chief editor there, and covering all the Trump impeachment shenanigans and the scandals that happened there. But most recently, and the reason why he is here today, is he just came back from the front, and we're so grateful to have him to give us a real insider's front row view of what is happening on the front lines. And so lots of questions. Are we winning? Are we losing? What's troop morale? Is troop shortage real? How did the troops greet the coming arrival of American aid? You were there for everything. Well, how's the situation?
I have been here since the beginning of the full-blown invasion in 2022. I was almost certain that Putin would invade. So I came here February the 16th, 2022, and I stayed for 10 months in 2022, 6 months last year. And I've been here since early February. So I'm able to do a comparison of how things have changed. On all those occasions, I've done a tour in my car around Ukraine. I think three or four times in 2022, the entire country, and three times last year. And I've just returned from another tour, which took me mostly to eastern Ukraine. I've spoken to a variety of people. And as I've told you, that I've always found it over the years very helpful to talk to, as far as the military goes, to ordinary soldiers or lieutenants, sergeants, NCOs, captains, majors, at that kind of level, they're willing to, if they trust you, to open up and give you a quite honest assessment of what's happening. With a general, or like with a president interviewing a prime minister, you more or less know what they're going to tell you. They're not going to break some big story or give away big secrets to you. But these people, if they trust you, and many of them become my friends over the years, they'll give an honest assessment. And I think that everyone knows that lots of these Ukrainian troops have been, some for over 2 years, in the same positions. I know of one brigade that's been on what's called the Bakhmut front since May 2022. And they're based in peacetime in Kolomia in western Ukraine, Ivano-Frankivsk Oblast. They get a pitiful amount of time leave, so they're not able to see their families. There's a lot of worry, concern about familial matters, and they're also just exhausted, that nobody's ready to throw in the white towel. Nobody's saying we've got to start negotiating because nobody trusts Putin. But there is a weariness and an eagerness for something to be done with conscription so that they can have a rest. So
the
fresh
troop shortage is real.
The troop shortage is real. And I don't think that the Ukrainian high command or the general staff is really trying to conceal that anymore. They've used euphemistic language previously, but in the same way that they've been very open about having to cede territory in recent weeks and recent days, that they've withdrawn from places. A withdrawal, however you couch it, is a retreat. And even if it's planned and it's not a rout, it's not something that any commander-in-chief is eager to do.
Even if it's just a village going backwards, is going back.
But that's kind of war that Ukraine's in, where, in fact, the movements, apart from spectacular advances, as in the fall of 2022 by Ukrainians to retake big swathes of Kharkiv, mostly it is incremental movements. But as people have said, every meter is soaked in blood or lost limbs.
How severe is the troop shortage based on what the troops told you? And I have no doubt that they confided in you because you're very trustworthy. You've known these people for a long time. Is it critical to the point where some pundits say there could be a breakthrough by Russia? They could take over Chasiv Yar, which is the strategic city in Donetsk Oblast. Is it that bad?
In Chasiv Yar, the principal problem isn't manpower. It's been because of the obstructions in Congress that produced this dramatic reduction in U.S. supplies. And it meant that Chasiv Yar has been pummeled by these glide bombs, these cab bombs, and missiles, different types of missiles and drones, without having very much in the way of a response, and ordinary artillery. There, they've instead of artillery, they've been using FPV, first-person view drones. They've been using it very effectively, and they've managed to hold the line. But they've told me the Russians have FPVs as well, but they've also got seemingly limitless amounts of artillery ammunition, and it is close enough there for Russian Soviet era artillery to be used.
Is it gonna fall?
I'd learned very early on in this kind of conflict reporting that the people who think they know what's going to happen have almost inevitably been wrong. I'll tell you what people that I've spoken to there said, that unless they get supplies coming in rapidly to enable them to start using their artillery again and rocket systems, if they get anti-aircraft defense, which can knock down the Russian planes that launch cabs, these glide bombs, from beyond the present reach of Ukrainian defenses, then the situation can change, and it is changing. But if the Russians just carry on pounding away in the way that they've done elsewhere, and they don't seem to care about how many people they lose, then theoretically, yeah, they could take it. But it's not going to happen. I think people have said the Kremlin would like it as a victory celebration for the May the 9th. I think it's much further off than that, and it's impossible to call it.
How important is that? You've written about how important keeping control of that city is. Why?
Because it is at a high point. It's not like it's on a mountaintop, but if you're driving towards that area from, say, northwest, Kramatorsk and Slovyansk, then and you're driving along the road, which then takes you through Druzhkivka and Konstantinovka, you can actually see the lay of the land. You can see that it's getting higher where Chasiv Yar is. And it doesn't have to be a mountain. It just needs to be significantly higher to give any artillery position there a huge advantage. And artillery controlling Chasiv Yar can hit the four big remaining
Ukrainian-held
Places, which are the ones I've enumerated: Slovyansk, Kramatorsk, Druzhkivka, Konstantinovka, and they can hit those. They can hit Konstantinovka anyway.
Ukraine needs to hold that at all costs.
Taking Chasiv Yar provides the Russians with a big opportunity to grab or just pummel into destruction these last remaining
big
ties of towns of any size,
right,
in the Donetsk region.
So we need to hold it.
That's the one of Ukraine's I think priorities is to do that.
If manpower shortage is not the big problem there, where did you see a real critical, or did you see a real critical manpower shortage anywhere?
You know, I just visit portions of the front, and so I get snapshots of places. I don't have the general staff feeding me statistics about Ukrainian casualties, deaths, right, wounded people. I can only get anecdotal stuff from the people that I meet. And in some places, it's been pure bad luck. I've come to places, and I know of other colleagues who visited places where the people have said, there were 100 of us this time this year, and now there's only 9 still fit to fight. The rest are dead or wounded. All it takes is for one big piece of ordnance to say land in the wrong place, and 50 people can be taken out at once. So I haven't seen places where there seems to be the deserted positions. I think that the numbers that they're talking about, that the importance in about numbers is that they want fresh people to be trained up, so they can replace, give a rest, give an opportunity for leave to some of these people who are exhausted. They're both exhausted physically, but also is debilitating psychologically. As I've said, I've never come across people who've said, we've had enough, we're going to surrender. Wait. But I've seen them over this period of the last 2 years, and I've seen the tiredness, and that is an important thing to address.
Ukraine waited months before lowering the conscription age from 27 to 25, which is still pretty high for a nation at war. What do the soldiers there make of that, and what is their attitude towards men who avoid military service?
A captain, actually a friend who's been promoted recently to major at that Bakhmut front. And when I saw him earlier this year, he said, Askel, what do you think they'd do to me if I went to Kyiv into one of these night clubs where people are enjoying themselves and threw a practice grenade in there? And he was saying it half comically, but there was a real kind of business. I told him, I don't think that's a great idea. But lots of people, obviously, understandably upset, angry, that they've been doing what they think is the right thing to do. They're not demanding to be called heroes, but they are angry at people who seem to be not just avoiding service, but kind of doing it in a flaunting manner. I've spoken to people who've been angered by sort of young kids driving around in expensive cars around Kyiv.
there's almost a million fighting age men abroad.
Again, on an anecdotal level, people were pleased at the Ukrainian government decision to
lower or
to suspend diplomatic services in consulates and embassies for Ukrainian men of fighting age that are abroad, unless they can sort of explain why they need to be in those countries.
Why do you think we waited so long on that? And is it too late? I mean, or not really when you're talking about a long war?
Because I haven't spent much time so far since coming to Ukraine on this occasion in Kyiv, and I haven't really spoken to politicians. If elections are suspended, and I don't think any serious people want a presidential election to be held, I don't see what the political consequences are for lowering this.
Got to win the war first.
Yeah, without winning the war, then all of this is like somebody would say rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
You know, now that they're open about it, and the U.S. And the Western partners applied pressure too, but I think the greatest pressure came from the military, who you talk to on a regular basis because they need more people. We still don't know how many more. Do you have any sense whether the army needs to double?
We don't have access to those kind of statistics. And much of it depends also on what the Russians do. And before we started recording this, we were talking a bit about how things may pan out. And I don't have any rigid idea. I think it's foolish. Anybody who says I know what's going to happen is either an idiot or
arrogant
or very arrogant.
We know people like that. Categories.
Many of the important factors it can depend on on Western support, principally the U.S. If Trump comes back into the White House in U.S. presidential elections. That's probably not good news for Ukraine. For me, I still think that one of the likeliest big changes, a breakthrough change, could happen in Russia, where people that we call the elite or the power brokers there, we're pretty certain that many of them would like to see Putin removed. They're too scared or too... They think it would make their own position vulnerable. But I think that that's one of the likeliest possibilities.
So the longer the war goes on, the greater the likelihood. We've been wishing that, and we hope it's not just wishful thinking because, you know, we talked about the three elements. So if the West provides everything that Ukraine needs to win, all the weapons, without hesitation, and they've been hesitating a lot, and opposition mounts in Russia, that could be another way to end the war. What more does Ukraine need to do? There is talk that Russia, when Ukraine wins on the battlefield, will not be a gracious loser. They will be a sore loser who lives next door and will want to always get even with Ukraine for the humiliation that they suffered during war. And will always be attacking Ukraine with whatever they have. Do you agree with that? And does that argue that Ukraine will have to make the painful transition from basically a democratic, peaceful society to a permanent Israel on permanent war footing?
Their whole history shows that under Tsarism or under Stalinist communism or under this kind of psychopathic banditry, that they're not good losers. And Putin hasn't made Russia the way it is, I think. I belong to those that think that Putin is a product of Russia, whether it's Tsarist or communist or the present environment. Too many Russians still crave or are willing to be subservient to a ghastly figure like Putin's. They will, of course, try to punish Ukraine and wreak revenge in whatever way they can. And I, like you, have heard that possibly what awaits Ukraine is a sort of Israeli solution where it's not exactly permanent war, but it's never peace. Everybody has to have some sort of training to come to the defense of
from
their
the of
country from the age of 18.
We're a long way from that.
But you've got to start somewhere. And you've probably also heard lots of times the example of Switzerland, which has managed to avoid war for so long. But again, where every male person, I don't know whether females are trained up as well, and they have access to weapons close to them.
Sweden has a total defense concept from 18 to 70. Whatever your ability...
Demands of your population aren't necessarily anti-democratic. They're not something that's not concomitant with democracy. And that, as far as I can see, unless there's some miraculous transformation in Russian attitudes towards Ukraine, that probably is the way that Ukraine will have to think about developing.
It's painful, though. Do you think Ukraine will get there as a society? Do you see evidence that it will?
Well, I mean, we've seen that since 2014, there's been a transformation in Ukrainian society. Many people said that if Putin had pressed on in 2014, if he just openly used Russian forces, well, he did, but pretended that they weren't there in places like the Baltsevar and Ilovice. But if he just continued in the fashion that he has since February 2022, he may have taken bigger swathes of Ukraine, because psychologically the resistance amongst the population might not have been there. Although it was in surprising places. Kharkiv resisted, Odessa resisted. So it was never, Ukraine was never
going to give us a country.
Fondness for being annexed by Russia that the Kremlin propagandists said. But we've seen how Ukrainian society has transformed since 2014, and again since 2022. I mean, one of my a stark example for me was that in 2022 I was in Kharkiv just a few days before the before February 24th and the full blown invasion began, and mostly you could hear Russian on the streets. I went there again last year. There was more Ukrainian on the streets. I've spent a number of weeks there just now, and Ukrainian is prevalent on the streets, and lots of younger people. Well, no, people of all ages have taken a principled decision to brush up on their Ukrainian and transform. Ukrainian society is able to adapt to needs, and has transformed successfully, positively. And if Ukrainians see that the sort of transformation, this kind of preparation for defense of your country, having training for everyone, even if they don't get sent to the front lines, but that they've got in a worst case scenario, everybody can pick up a weapon. I think Ukrainians will be open to that.
Do you think we can count on the West to support Ukraine? I say we. I'm American, but I'm a permanent resident of Ukraine, so I often say we in reference to Ukraine. Can we count on that support? And it seems like, if not, we'd better develop our own weapons in big quantities.
I think both those last two statements, I think, are worth pondering on. I don't think that we can 100% rely, I've used the collective we for Ukraine, even though I'm a Brit and an American. We've seen, unfortunately, in other instances where the West has abandoned its allies. So you can never dismiss that. Also, we're not, the West isn't a unitary system.
It's That's
not,
for sure.
It's not Putin, and it's not a dictatorship. We're used to kicking out our governments every 4 or 5 years, and at the most in the US they'll have a president will have an eight-year stretch, and so a lot of the new administrations need learning time to come up to scratch Which is why I think that both George Bush, G.W. Bush Jr., and after him, Obama, Hillary Clinton, tried to make nice with Putin. It took them a year, 18 months to see he was just pulling their chains.
Well, there are transformations that we talked about. Hopefully they will all have their Emmanuel Macron moment and move to becoming a hawk.
It's impossible to predict. Well, but we have seen, I think, a learning arc in the Western countries. NATO and others hold themselves to be democratic countries where they shied away from angering Moscow, angering Putin, Macron being the most dramatic
We still have a ways
example.
To go. Right.
But there still is a ways.
Been painfully slow.
But they have come to accept what the message that Kyiv was drumming into them long before the 2022 February invasion. For years, Kyiv had been saying, this is not just our conflict. This the fate of democracy to a large extent throughout the world depends on allowing Ukraine to fall or making sure that Ukraine
I think
wins.
They're having progress of that.
I think there has been progress.
You know, I think is that the West, unfortunately, Ukrainians have to get killed and get bombed before the West starts thinking, well, what happens? What are the consequences if Ukraine loses? And if there is a big hope, do you see hope that the West has? I know it's not one entity, but generally there is a consensus that we have to stop.
I think the trend has been in that direction because, as we both know, the West is a jigsaw of different types of slightly different political systems, characters, historical attitudes. But the trend has been in a direction favorable to Ukraine. And I think that those countries that have given any kind of help, military help to Ukraine, know that Russia isn't going to forgive them.
Before we wrap up, there was a very specific, been reading a lot of reports of chemical weapons use. Did you come across that? The Russians using illegal banned chemical weapons?
Look, I've asked people about that. And in some places, they've said that it's like the equivalent of tear gas.
Right.
I haven't come across places where people have been fatally affected by chemical weapons. I think that the Ukrainian government or the military did present some evidence, and I think that they want an independent view, which won't affect the Russians because
they don't care.
They'll say, you know, it's independent.
Fake, yeah.
I think the Russians are capable of doing that if they think they can
get away
if there aren't witnesses to it.
What should we look for this summer? And I won't hold you to the prediction. Kerch Bridge coming down?
What I've been told is that the Kerch Bridge, Ukraine has the ability to make it unusable for at least a time by the Russians. Doing it just as a one-off to show that they can do it is not particularly useful. It should be part of, I've been told, a more elaborate,
coordinated
advance, maybe to cut a way through to the Azov Sea to sever the land bridge from Russia to Crimea as part of a broader operation. But I've been told that when you see the Kerch Bridge hit, you can expect exciting events.
Askold, I know you've got a lot of trips and a lot more reporting to do. I wanted to ask you if you've got another book in you on this.
You know, I had a book proposal with an agent in January 2022. And when this all kicked off, went full-blown invasion, I decided to, I thought I'd better hold off. I don't know if I regret that. I still do want to do a book, and I've got a heck of a load of just very personal stories from extraordinary people, soldiers, civilians who are brave, kind, decent, wonderful people. And if I can somehow write about those, just a sliver, a fraction, convey to a broader audience the extraordinariness, the magnificence of these people, I'd like to do that. But I know that a crop of interesting books are already on the horizon.
I'm looking forward to yours, because I neglected to mention this great book, An Orange Revolution, a personal journey through Ukrainian history. Great to have you here. You're one of the great war correspondents of our time covering this war. You know the history, the context. You know Ukraine, UK, and America. Readers are forever in your debt for the understanding that you're bringing to the situation. And thanks for coming on the program.
Well, it's not a mutual admiration society, but I admire you. You've done a hell of a lot for this country, and I know that it's in your heart, and I know that you've been on a personal journey through Ukraine as well. So thank you for inviting me.